Hello and welcome to the Wild Wormhole, where much like the card, you never know what you're going to get. I'm your host, D-House, here with Jay Bray, Jim Brayden. What's up, Jim?
Hello. Good to be here, David.
Yes, we are back for another episode. Apologize if the audio quality isn't as good as normal. I do not have my normal microphone, and Jim's got a nice barking dog that might interrupt us. We persevere.
The highest quality of podcast.
It's a classic wormhole, right? Like, you never know if it's going to be good audio quality or terrible, you know? You just kind of roll with it.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's just us all together. So, all right, let's just jump right in then.
Heck yeah, we've got so much to talk about today. And so we are just going to get right into it with our Keyforge endeavors. We are busy. You and I, we are busy practicing for the World Championship Last Chance qualifiers.
Yeah, and of course it's because we have not yet qualified for Worlds, but darn, we're gonna try our hardest.
But wait, Jim, I thought Worlds was canceled.
You know, I did too, but wait, the wonderful
people, there's more. We sound like an infomercial. This is phenomenal.
Seriously though, I'm trying to sell you Keyforge decks, Age of Ascension, because we have to move that merchandise. But yeah, so Knowledge is Power, they're a team that's putting on this event. They're calling it Shadow Worlds, and it's going to all be online through their client, through KIP tournaments. So do you want to give them a quick rundown of kind of what that looks like, how you can qualify, and then how the actual Worlds is going to run?
Yeah, so the Last Chance qualifiers, they're this Saturday on kiptournaments.com. There's two qualifiers. There's one at noon and one at 8 p.m., and these are Eastern time zones. So do the math accordingly. Luckily, I live in Eastern time zone, so I don't have to do math, which is, you know, D-House's favorite thing.
Amazing.
The one at noon is Archon Adaptive Short. So you bring one deck, you play one game, you bid chains for each other's decks if you want them, or you choose different decks and play, and that's it. And each one is a five-round Swiss tournament. If you finish 3-2, you qualify. And then only one member of your team needs to qualify for Worlds the following week or the following weekend. So we're hoping that Team Wormhole will send at least one person through in one of these two qualifiers. I feel like we have a pretty good chance, but I don't even want to say that, because we're going to, like, you know, just across the board go like 2-3 in all the events and
all six attempts. It's going to be 2-3.
It's like, oh, poor Team Wormhole. They're destined to make content and never actually succeed at the game. So
it would be our luck that we're both 2-2 at the last, like, chance for it, and we get paired together in like round five. Like, that would be the way that we would end up qualifying.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's like, okay, we auto win. Yes. Scoop. So anyways, I'm very excited about it. Listen, if you have not paid attention to this podcast, I've got two kids under two. There was no chance I was going to physical Worlds. So the fact that this is online, even if it's not the same experience, the idea of, hey, I got something competitive to play for and I can actually play is very thrilling. And I know there's some other dad forgers out there, maybe some mom forgers, who knows, who are grateful for the opportunity to actually do it. So so I'm really excited. You feeling good?
Good, yeah. To actually be playing. Good about winning? Man, we'll see. It'll be a lot of fun, though. I'm really excited.
Yeah. We've been practicing thinking it's just going to be like solo Archon, bring a deck, play a game. And so the Adaptive Short was a little bit of a curveball where we're like, oh, well, do we play different decks? Do we play the same deck for Archon? Like, how do we do it? Like, it's gonna be interesting.
Yeah, there's definitely just that extra layer of thought that goes into deck selection on top of just before we even play the game, how to play it. So I think it just caters really well to people who can think as far as understand deck lists, what's good, what's not great, and it's just another layer of skill kind of added on top of it. So I think it's a pretty cool idea. And then I like that the second Last Chance qualifier is just Archon single. So it's just you bring your best deck, you run it, and you go 3-2, you're in. So
there you go.
Yeah.
So we'll see. We'll wait until we actually play to talk about the decks that we chose, but that can be our next episode or something. But that's coming up. So you can sign up for that too. Just if you Google search the Knowledge is Power Discord and join there. There's a lot of details in there. You can sign up on Challenge and hit up on there. Also this Sunday, we will be live streaming the Sanctimonious Glorious Few Invitational team event. Very excited about that. The guys at Sanctimonious are putting this together, really trying to raise the awareness on Twitch of KeyForge happening. And so we're part of the stream team. There's several different content creators who are going to be streaming the team events. So we're going to have a very full weekend of KeyForge.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, what else can you want? You're stuck at home. You can watch KeyForge online on Twitch. I think this is really the best opportunity to get some hype around Worlds, get hype around the game, and we're very lucky that we can play this online and get to enjoy it from home just in these times. So, what more could you want right now?
yeah, for sure. So be sure to check us out, twitch.tv/thewildwormhole on Sunday. I believe it starts around 1 p.m. Eastern time, so would love to see you on there. And then final thing before we get into our main topic of the day is also KIP hosted a true survival tournament this past weekend online. And if you don't know what true survival is, you bring three decks to the tournament. And you choose the order in which you want to play them. If the deck loses, it's eliminated from the tournament. And if you run out of decks to play with, you're out. And so basically, you have to survive. And so there were, I believe, 75 or 76 players that played in this thing, which was incredible. And the competition was insane. I did not play in it. I recorded each game and then added commentary to put on YouTube. I've got six games on there right now, and I think I have six more games to put on there, including the finals. And I think if you're following it all, I think I can announce the winner because people know, so it's not going to be a surprise or whatever. But congrats to Dave Cordero for pulling it out in the end. He did become the ultimate survivor. I wanted to make a survivor joke, but I don't know that show very well, so I don't know.
I don't know if I'm happy to admit or sad to admit that I think I've seen every episode of Survivor and still currently watching. So he outwit, outlasted, and outplayed the entire field.
Oh my gosh. Of course you have. That's so random. That show came out more than 20 years ago, it feels like.
Yeah, and every Wednesday night, it's still on.
I can't believe it.
So we just record it. When I get home, I watch it and then go to bed every Wednesday.
Oh my gosh.
So, yeah, it's still fantastic. Anyway, about this Survivor tournament.
Yes, really cool format. Really hope to see more of those because I think we saw some interesting decks out there. And even just what order you play your decks is very interesting, I think, in this kind of a scenario. And so, yeah, with some really crazy competition, guys going, really good players going 1-3 and getting dropped from the tournament. That's the kind of level of competition that was in there. So if you want to see it, go to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/thewildwormhole. You can start seeing the games on there. Any other thoughts on the survival tournament?
Yeah, I think my favorite part about the format, especially, I know they did a pretty large in-person tournament with a similar style, but it was if you made it to day two, the last deck you played with became your deck for day two, and then it just became Archon single that day. And so it was kind of strange because people were intentionally throwing games if they'd already qualified for day two to make sure that they got to the deck that they were wanting to play. Where if you had to use your second deck to... Or you had to use your second deck to qualify on the last round. People didn't get to, essentially weren't able to pick your best of the three that was still alive, which seemed kind of silly. So this one was just Swiss all the way through. So you just played your first deck until it lost, second deck until it lost, and there was no Archon single style tournament at the end of it. So I just really liked that, just that it kind of took away that throwing games to get your best deck into the singles format, and really just kind of let you see how far you can go with a deck and really push it to its limits. So that was just my last thought on there. Thought that was a great judgment call Obviously, the first part definitely has some strategy to it, but I don't know. Something about intentionally losing games of Keyforge to become stronger just seems a little strange. So,
I'm totally with you there. I like the true survival side of it. I feel like if you start and you win 10 straight games with your first deck, you shouldn't be penalized by like losing once because that's the deck you had to play in the next round or the second day or whatever. So, I like it, again, another thing I enjoy about Keyforge, not just like the uniqueness of each deck and uniqueness of games, but like the uniqueness of the formats that allows you to do different things you can't do in other games. So I love it.
Exactly. All right. You ready to jump into the meat of this episode?
Let's do it. So I don't know. Was it Thursday? We got, an article, in addition to the Ask Me Anything stream, from FFG, and basically they gave us a little bit of a gift in that they gave us 4 print and play decks from the next set in Mass Mutation that we can print out and throw on the table with whoever you live with, I guess. or if people like playing on TTS, I know the decks are on there, and I think they're trying to get it on the other platforms. But so basically we decided we're going to take the first deck and we're going to read through the deck list. We're going to go through the cards and kind of give a little bit of a hot take, impressions of the cards. I think Jim, maybe you got a little bit more time with the cards. I think I glanced at them briefly. So some of these I'm going to be reading for the first time.
Yeah. I've read them all through, have a couple ideas for what they're going with for each house, but I'll also be, we'll be giving just some pretty hot takes and, just kind of as I see it, my thoughts initially. So again, we don't know the rest of the cards in the set. We don't know how they're going to necessarily interact, what cards are going to be brought back. So it's kind of, we're going to look at the card and see what we think about it as kind of a standalone card. So
yeah. For sure. Hot takes is the key word because we could be completely wrong on some of these things. And
I hope we are, just so people can rub it in our face.
Yes, yes. So we are doing the deck rapidly ever changing Sadao.
Yes, all of the above.
Okay. All right. So this is a Sanctum Saurian Untamed deck list, and so we're gonna hop right in with the Sanctum piece. Why don't we just alternate cards, reading them off, and then the other person can start with their thoughts.
Yeah, sounds good.
So I'll read this one off, and you can start with your thoughts. This is an action card called Commandeer. There's an Amber Pip. Although, how do we know if the Amber Pip is supposed to be there or whether it was enhanced?
Sure, good question. So the way they've described it is the Amber Pip will have the normal background attached to it if it's supposed to be on the card. It will have almost a like lightning bolt similar to like the size of the anomalies cards on that location to show you that it was an enhanced mechanic and that it's not normally on the card. So as we go through these, you'll be able to see them. Again, anybody who hears this deck list wants to go check them out, just you can literally Google like FFG Keyforge and you can find the article and it shows all of the pictures as well.
Okay, yeah, I'm seeing what you mean with the little lightning anomaly look to the Amber Pip side.
Yes.
Interesting. Okay. All right. So this one would be, it actually is a, it comes with an Amber Pip.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. And it has, so it's Commandeer, comes with an Amber Pip, and it has an action play effect for the remainder of the turn. After you play another card, a friendly creature captures one. What do you think, Jim?
I really like this card. I still think Amber Control is one of the most important parts of Keyforge. Just playing that mind game of should I try to, you know, race to 20 and then get too much to protect or just barely go over. I think this is a card that's great for holding on to until they just go over the check range. It says play another card, so it won't trigger on itself. So I don't think the ceiling for this card is super high for number of cards that you can, or number of amber that you can capture, unless, you know, it's paired with like Logos or another deck that's able to archive a lot. to potentially get more of these Sanctum cards in there. There's definitely some potential. I think realistically you can probably capture two with that, but to get an Amber on top of that and potentially stop a Forge, I think it's a good card. I love, you know, Amber control. I feel like this set didn't have nearly as much. It was a lot of Amber protection, but not as much. You just lose Amber. So I like the card. I think it's a good card.
Yeah, so it has a little bit of feeling of like Terms of Redress from Coda, where you played it, you got an Amber pip, and a friendly creature captures two. So if you're if we're thinking like, oh, you probably capture two-ish on average, it's somewhat comparable. But what I like about this one in particular is that for each other card, you can have a different friendly creature capture one. So instead of putting two on one creature, you can spread it out so you can so that the targets, it's not as easy for them to get that Amber back necessarily for the ones that are capturing it.
Yeah, exactly.
And then
exactly.
If you can archive this and you're getting like 3-4 range where you're capturing that much, I feel like that's super valuable. And this is a common, so I feel like, I think this is good. It's not like amazing Amber control, but I like it.
Agreed. I think your comment about Terms of Redress was great. It's kind of, it has a little bit higher of a ceiling, but for the most part, two's probably going to be about average, so I like the design. The next card on here is called Fangs of Gizzleheart. It's also a common card. It has an Amber pip on it. With this deck, it also does have enhanced capture Amber. So if you see that on a card, it looks like an Amber pip with just a gray line going through it, and that's their symbol for capture an Amber. So that means another card in this deck says enhanced with a capture symbol, and this card randomly got that symbol. So anyway, Fangs of Gizzleheart has an Amber pip on it, and it says play, purge the most powerful creature. David, what are your thoughts?
It's double-edged sword, right? Because this could also straight up just kill your own guy. And when you have Sanctum in a deck, you're going to have some beefy dudes. So I feel like this is one of those cards that you might hate seeing sometimes, and then you might love seeing sometimes. If the other guy drops a Gargantodon and tributes twice, you're going to love it. But outside of that, I could see this backfiring terribly. So I don't know. I don't love it. But having some somewhat targeted removal is nice. Does Purge – I should know this. Does Purge get around Ward?
It does not, I don't think. I believe it's still removing it from play.
Yeah, you're right.
And it's still a good question. I mean, wards are still kind of a tricky source. There's a lot of timing issues with if you have elusive, if you have shields, how does the wards work? So still a valid question, but yeah, I'm pretty sure the ward would still get blocked. So, yeah, I kind of agree with you. Definitely a double-edged sword. I like that. I mean, it's not like an Omega card where you'd have to play it after you play your Sanctum guys. So if you're calling Sanctum, there's a decent chance that you don't have that board out yet. So you could start with this to purge one of their creatures and then gain board control by playing out your Sanctum guys. So early turns, I think it's great to kind of establish that Sanctum board. From what I've seen, so with Mass Mutations, they phased out Brobnar and Sanctum came back. And from the little bit I've seen, Sanctum is definitely a fight-heavy class or house. So it's trying to fight, it's trying to capture. Similar to like generic Saurians without all the craziness, at least from what I've seen. But it's definitely kind of a fighting house in general. So to potentially get early board control, I think would be great. And then being able to use the bigger Sanctum guys to maintain that control and capture the way they're Amber, I think is kind of the idea they're going for here. So. Like you said, though, definitely double-edged sword and could also just be a dead card in your hand a lot of times.
All right, next card is Font of the Eye, another Sanctum card. It's an artifact. It's a common. It has an Omni effect. It says, if an enemy creature was destroyed this turn, a friendly creature captures one. And I believe this is the first Omni effect that isn't like discard this to do this effect. It's just like a constant every... No matter what house, no matter what turn, you can always just, you know, exhaust this and get the effect.
Yeah, definitely. It might as well just be a like passive effect. Just kind of if an enemy creature, yeah.
Or the first time of, yeah. Well, I mean, there may be moments where you don't want to for some reason. So I like that it gives you a little bit of versatility.
Sure, sure. What's the name of the Brobnar artifact that does similar? Is it Pile of Skulls?
Yeah.
And that's every time an enemy creature dies on your turn, you capture one. So this one is a little bit different. You can only do one per turn, but it is, like you said, every turn it has that potential. So I think it's enough. I think Sanctum, for the most part, is going to be capturing anyway. So there's probably going to be one or two more captures that turn. So I think it's just kind of that extra little edge to try to push you over the top. So I think it's okay. It's kind of a bummer it doesn't have Amber Pip attached to it, but it's fine.
Might get
I don't think I'd be super excited. What was that?
You could get it enhanced, you know, you never know.
That's true. Always the dream. You can say that about any card though. So all right. Next up is a Sanctum creature. It's called General Zalvador, spelled with an X, which is pretty cool. He's a 4-power, 2-shield creature. It says enhance, and then it has 2 of the capture symbols. When that just means 2 cards in your deck, or 1 card will have 2 symbols, I think it can double up. It just adds 2 capture symbols to different cards in your deck. And so this is the first card that we've talked about, at least, with that enhance ability. And so, David, do you want to kind of give your thoughts real quick?
Yeah, I think it's fine. You know, it's like Amber control is never a bad thing. So getting, even if it is capture, you know, we know this deck does have Saurian. I haven't looked to see if it has like Imperial Scutum or Ludo or something to basically make that Amber go away. But, you know, when you play this guy, you're not getting a ton because you're not getting an effect on him, you're enhancing other cards, so it's sort of like a give and take. So I think it's fine. I mean, two armor is like is very strong. We've seen that like be significant in lots of matchups. So yeah,
I think it kind of adds to that incremental capture that I think I've kind of seen, at least with this deck and potentially with just Sanctum in general moving forward. Is I think we're used to those, you know, big turns where you play a Charette and capture 3 or Abad the Grim or Old Bruno, and it's kind of those big I captured 3 turns, where at least from what I've seen, this card kind of adds to that last artifact we talked about, where it's a bunch of little capture 1 mechanics. So it's almost, it just makes your deck like poking at you by just capturing a little bit at a time. So I kind of like it. I think it just makes it more consistent, even though it's less than like a Charette because it's only 2 rather than 3. But again, the 4 power with 2 shields, it's nothing to, you know, scoff at either. It definitely helps with maintaining that board control, which you're definitely going to want with a lot of captured Amber. So
yep, for sure. All right. So then the next card, we should probably hit 2 in a row. So because it's called Gizzleheart's Zealot, and there's 3 of them. And Gizzleheart is the name of the Sanctum leader that comes in here, because all the other houses have leaders. So Mad Prophet Gizzleheart is the leader. So let me read both of them, and then you can give me your hot takes on both of them. Now, in this particular deck, there are 3 Gizzleheart's Zealot. It is a Sanctum creature with 4 power, human knight, and it is a common. Gizzleheart's Zealot enters play ready and enraged. So you got to fight if you want to do anything with him. Mad Prophet Gizzleheart is the Sanctum leader. He comes in at 4 power, 3 armor. He's a leader priest, and he is a rare. It says, while Mad Prophet Gizzleheart is in the center of your battle line, it gains action. Fully heal each non-mutant creature. Gain 1 for each creature healed this way. So there's some kind of obvious synergy that's coming across both of these, but what do you think about the Gizzleheart's?
Yeah, I'll start with Gizzleheart's Zealot. I think as a standalone card, which I'm assuming you can get these guys without having the leader Gizzleheart in there. As a standalone card, I don't love this card. I think we've seen, you know, houses that focus on fighting not be super strong in Keyforge in the past. And until I am blown away and see something different, I kind of am under the assumption that board control is good, but not going to be game winning per se. However, paired with the leader, I think Mad Prophet Gilzelhart is really good at keeping your board state with all of the captured amber. So I actually do like Gilzelhart. I think he's a pretty solid rare. The fact that you can, you know, fight with all of your creatures and then fully heal them up and gain amber for that is super solid. And so it protects a lot of your creatures with their captured amber, especially because most of them will have shields, so they probably didn't take a ton of damage anyway. And just being able to maintain that board is pretty great. So I would say I do really like Mad Prophet Gizelhart as far as what Sanctum's trying to do. I hope I'm wrong. I hope, you know, board control is great in this set, and, you know, it's just another layer of Keyforge that kind of gets added with Mass Mutations, but I guess that'll be seen in the future. So what are your thoughts on him?
Yeah, so as far as the Mad Prophet, the leader, goes, I did tweet a photo of this and tweeted that I was a little underwhelmed, and I feel like the Twitter sphere was a little, like, 50-50 on it. Like, some people were like, yep, same, and others were like, no, look, he's got this, whatever. I do think the argument for him is the staying power, right? And I think, ironically, the Sanctimonious guys came to the defense of their leader card. Dan and Jake, they said it is, like, Sanctum is all about sticking to the board and staying there. And so with three armor, like, that's very, very good. Because really, it's like, it's going to be real hard to one-shot Gizelhart. So you might have to trade more than one creature for it. But it's just that ability of he has to be in the center, and guys have to be hurt for him to get more than just like a basic reap out of it. So it's very like feast or famine. You could get nothing out of that action, or you could get like 8 amber. You know, you can burst up, which I think I did. Oh gosh, what's the card that does that? That heals one for each of the, or heals one from each.
Is that Cleansing Wave?
Cleansing Wave, thank you. It's yeah. Cleansing Wave on a stick, right? And I did that against you in a game, I think we played for YouTube, and burst it up by like 10 amber, and then you too much to protect me because I forgot you had too much to protect. oops. So it's like, okay, this could be really great, but it could also hurt. So I don't know. I'm on the fence. I'm not. I need to see it in action. But the zealots obviously pair well with them, if they have guys that are less than, you know, 4 health. but
I think going off of what you were saying with the staying power, I like it too because it's essentially like you chose to reap and then just got to kill one of their creatures with your other Sanctum guys. So even I think that's always the issue with the houses that just fight for board is you fight, but you don't gain amber. And so with Mad Prophet Gizelhart, you're able to, you know, do what they're trying to do of keeping the board while also gaining that amber. And so I would almost compare it to like the ward mechanic that was in Saurians for Worlds Collide, where because they were warded, they could, you know, do their things and reap and go crazy. I think this is kind of a pretty solid attempt to let that kind of happen with Sanctum as well, while going towards the win condition of, you know, forging 3 keys, not just winning the board. So, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. Again, I don't think I've seen strictly, like, houses that fight for board be super great. But we'll see how it goes. It has potential for sure. So, all right, we're going to go back now. Did you have any other thoughts before we move on?
Nope, let's do it.
All right, let's see here. The next card on the list is Gorm of Om. I won't read that one. That's a pretty common card. It's an artifact. Just letting you know that it's back in Mass Mutations is set. So moving forward with that, we have another creature called Scrivener Favian. It is a 3-power mutant creature, and it also has enhanced Capture 2. And again, those can be spread out to 2 different cards, could be on the same card. So it's a part of that chip kind of capture mechanic for Sanctum again. And it also says when you resolve a captured amber bonus icon, so when you play a card that has that enhanced ability to capture one, You may choose to steal one instead. So that's spicy. What do you have? What are your thoughts there?
I absolutely love that. I feel like Sanctum has always needed some steel in it to make it a little bit spicier. It's got a lot of capture or stuff like doorstep to make you lose amber, but not a lot of steel. Like I genuinely can't think of like one way that you can steal with Sanctum. Am I going crazy? I can't think of a single one.
Nothing's coming to mind. There might be one. If there is,
someone's screaming at their speakers right now. You idiot. but man, all of a sudden, like all those enhanced capture icons that are popping up on other cards, it's like, oh, so if you got this little lady out there, like, holy cow, you can really, burst. I mean, there's someone here that had like, I think I saw one or two that had maybe like two capture enhanced icons on it, maybe I'm making that up. I don't know. But it's like you get a lot of those enhanced for capture with this, and this deck in particular has two of them. Now it is an uncommon, so I don't know that you're going to see a lot of decks with two of them. But I don't think you're going to be sad about seeing double of these, even though she is only 3 power, which isn't great.
Yeah, I think I'm not too worried about the 3 power. I think there will probably be typical Sanctum mechanics to be able to buff that or give them shields, different ways to kind of protect her. Taunts are usually pretty popular in Sanctum as well, so there will probably be a way or two in your deck to kind of protect her a little bit. I think she would definitely become the target, which could also help, you know, the rest of your Sanctum board to kind of maintain itself. But I think she's cool. Like you said, it's rare that we've seen steel, and the fact that you just get their amber rather than it kind of just a slow stall of their amber that they'll eventually get back, it's almost like you're just loaning it to them. Yeah, that's super great.
Love it.
Yeah.
Next card on the list is the Spirit's Way. It's just a reprint. Destroy each creature with power 3 or higher. So it's nice to see that back, especially because pretty much all of Star Alliance, most of Star Alliance and Saurians are 3 or higher. So I don't think you'll mind seeing this pop out.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, just it's a little awkward in Sanctum just because they're typically also above 3, but board clears are usually good, especially if you get a little behind. It's a great catch-up mechanic. So that's all of the Sanctum. You want to move on to Saurian?
Yep. So Saurian, first card here is Axiom of Grisk, just a reprint, another little board wipe. And then the first new card is Consul Primus. There's two of them in this particular deck. It's a Saurian 3-power creature with enhanced capture, which again synergizes with that Sanctum card we just saw. But it has a reap effect. Move 1 amber from a creature to another creature. And it's a common. Jim, thoughts?
Yeah, I really like this card. I loved Saurians when I first got it. I think one of the first decks I had Exile in it, which is the give one of your creatures to an opponent. And so it was the dream to exalt it a bunch and then give it over and kill it off. And this card just kind of does that work for you. I don't think it's a big threat, so it's likely to stay out on the board. And it doesn't say from a friendly creature to another friendly creature. You can essentially just pass that amber over to your opponent and then kill it off. So if you have a creature, whether it's exalted or has captured an amber, which I'm assuming Saurians will probably still play off of the more amber captured on them, the better they become. Yeah, I think it's great just that you can pass that amber back and it's a slow steal mechanic rather than a loan. So I like it.
I think that's great to be able to exalt like a Questor Jarda without feeling as punished by it because your Consul Primus is just throwing them back over to the other side. So that's great.
Yeah.
Really solid.
All right, next card up is Galatops. Looks like a giant Stegosaurus being held back. He is a 12-power creature. Whoa, 12-power. However, he is a beast, and he only deals 4 damage when fighting. So very similar to Gargantodon or Pterodactyl. He only deals 4 damage when fighting.
Yep. So this is a common, so you're going to see this guy a lot. I think it's okay, I guess. It feels like a target for, you know, for you to if you're going to capture it a lot, throw him on this guy, even if he only does four when fighting. Four, I feel like, is like a really good, strong, like, if it starts to get higher than four, they get really, like, nuanced type creatures, but I feel like a majority of creatures are four or lower. I feel like at one point there was some statistics out there for the average, like, power level of creatures, but in any case, he's a great, you know, tribute target. If you got tribute, other capture, if you got a ton of capture icons, which this deck seems to want to capture a lot, feels fine to throw it on there. But yeah.
Yeah, I'll go with the hot take. I don't like this card. I feel like every time I see a Gale of Tops in my decks, I'm just going to be disappointed. The only thing it really has over Pterodactyl is that it's not coming in stunned, but Pterodactyl at least can do 4 damage and kind of get around elusives. So this can't even do that. If you attacked an elusive, you wouldn't get that. I think there's a lot of 5-power creatures that still have pretty good effects. I'm thinking of, like, Hapsis, Dodgers. There's just a lot of either 5-power or 4-power plus a shield creatures that you want removed that this just can't do anything with. So, I don't know. I think it's practically a vanilla card that if I don't like fighting decks anyway, I think I'm probably going to be pretty disappointed. It also doesn't have, like, the passive effect of, you know, your Amber can't be stolen, it's captured instead. It's just kind of a big dude. So, I don't know. I don't think it's great. And I don't even think it's that big of a hot take. I think for the most part, you're going to be kind of disappointed if you see this card. So, that's where I'm at. All right. What's that next card that we have? We have Hedonistic Intent. This is an action card that has an Amber Pit attached to it. And it says, play, exalt each flank creature.
And that's, yeah, that's yours and your opponent's.
Yes.
So, very interesting. It's an uncommon. Let's see. This could be really spicy if your opponent, if you don't have creatures on board and they just play out theirs and then you're able to drop that before you play your own guys. To just throw some extra amber on there. Yeah, I'm struggling to evaluate this. It's weird, right? Because, like, you're getting an amber pip, so you're netting one amber gain, assuming all four of those creatures are killed. If you each have, like, more than one creature on each battle line, so in a way, it feels like Fertility Chant or like Fuzzy Gruen, like where you're getting a little bit more benefit, but you're giving them, your opponent, a little bit of a benefit. Although, I guess being able to control when you play it and how you play it and what creatures it goes on, it gives you a little bit of an advantage. But, yeah, risky. But I think it'll be interesting.
Yeah, I think the risk is there. I think what I like about it is that you get to dictate when that risk happens. And obviously, Saurians can, you know, really take advantage of Exalted Amber, whether that's making their creatures, you know, super large. It could also lead to, you know, being able to forge with the Amber on the Exalted creatures. There's different cards like Shrix or Senator Brachus that can do that. I just think that you, like, while it's when it's in your deck, you're much more likely to play to its effect in a way that's helpful. Also, the fact that it's each flank creature means that you can just play 2 Saurians on either flank and then just exalt them. And again, much more likely that they will be protected. And like you said, it is net 1, but I would say it's probably more likely to net higher than that. Just because you also get to, you know, exalt 2 of their creatures, that you can get that amber back probably a little bit easier than they can get one off of your Saurian guy. Yeah, it's a little bit of a double-edged sword.
If you board wipe, like, so you play this and then get board wiped the next turn, it's like, ultimately, you ended up with 3 amber, they ended up with 2. That's where I'm getting the net 1.
Yeah, agreed. as of like a vanilla card, if Sariant couldn't do more with Exalted Amber, it's strictly a net one. But I think there is enough upside with Exalted Amber on Sariant creatures that I think it's a pretty cool card. I don't think I'll be disappointed to see it. I just don't know if it does enough for me to get excited about it, like being in my deck, but it still like helps you get towards a win condition. So I like it. It's fine.
Cool. All right, yeah. Next card is Humble. It's a Sariant action card. It does come with an Amber Pip. In this particular deck, it's been enhanced with a capture. But it has a play effect, exhaust a creature. If you do, move three Amber from that creature to the common supply. So basically trying to protect all of your crazy exalting and or the extra capturing you've done in this deck. Like in this example, because it's enhanced with a capture icon, you resolve your bonus icons first, and so you can capture and then move it. So, Jim, thoughts?
Oh, this is weird. I am trying to figure out when I would be excited to play this card. Because if you're exhausting your opponent's creature, that's now three less Amber that you won't get back. But at the same time,
oh, I didn't even catch that you could do that to your opponent. Yeah.
Yeah. But at the same time, like if they have an Imperial Scutum on it, it's great because, you know, you weren't going to get that Amber anyway. It could also be a win condition for them to fight or use that creature's action. So there's potential upside there. But at the same time, to, you know, not reap or fight with one of your creatures just to remove three Amber, I think that's playing too much into the, like, Exalted Amber's risky mechanic to the extent of, like, I don't know. I don't think I would ever be super excited to play it. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe.
Worst case, this is, like, a really bad Nocturnal Maneuver, you know, where you exalt. Like, because you could choose a creature on their side that has no Amber on it. You just don't want it to be able to activate next round like a Kirby or a Lord Invidious, you know, like, it's like, oh, I'm just going to quickly just exhaust them so you don't get them next turn, like, at its worst.
Yeah, that's a good point. I don't think I'd hate that as much. Yeah, the moving through Amber off the opponent's creature almost seems like a downside because if you want to eventually kill that creature off and gain that three Amber back. But yeah, just like you said, just a quick, you know, one Nocturnal Maneuver rather than exhausting three creatures. That seems okay. And you get an Amber for it. So yeah, I don't hate it. Good call. All right, up next, in this deck, there is a Pterodactyl. So big Sariant creatures. Man, that'd be such a cool playmat. Sorry, got distracted a little bit. So as in Worlds Collide, it's also going to be in Mass Mutations. And Good of the Many, that was also in Worlds Collide, correct? All right. I don't know why they put a Worlds Collide rare in this deck, but they have it. It at least has an enhanced capture Amber on there, so it's a little bit different. The next up is the Lycosaurus, which is actually a new card, so we can talk about it. It's a 5-power mutant dinosaur with skirmish, and it says, play, you may exalt Lycosaurus. If you do, deal 3 damage to a creature.
You may exalt him if you do deal 3 to a creature with skirmish. Interesting. I like that. Just in the same way I like Mustic Myrmec dropping down and doing 4 to something. Like, again, there's a lot of powerful creatures at 3 health or less. Witch of the Eye, Kirby's, stuff like that. So I like that it's a May effect as well. Like, it could just be like, hey, get this dinosaur out there. I don't think this is the best dinosaur out there, but I think, again, it's like you're not going to be disappointed to see some damage out of hand, potentially. So,
yeah. So, I don't know if you were aware of this. This is one of the cards that are unique. And the reason they're unique, it has that little star symbol. Not a star symbol, but it's that kind of weird star diamond symbol. So, these creatures, there's actually going to be 6 of these type of creatures in each house. For 42 total of these kind of special, unique creatures. And so with these mutants, what they do is, if it's a Sariant house, I think all of the Sariants have the last word being Saurus. So this is the Lycosaurus. So I believe this is probably the untamed plus Sariant mutant. And that's where it gets its skirmish from. And so all of the Sauruses are going to have the play. You may exalt like a Saurus. If you do, deal 3 damage to a creature. But then whichever house it's paired with, it's going to get another little buff to it. And so with this one being the Lycosaurus, it's going to gain skirmish because untamed creatures typically have skirmish. And I think there's another one in this deck too, which we'll be able to talk about in a minute. So yeah, kind of in general, I think that's such a cool theme behind mass mutations is these mutated creatures. So the fact that each house has 6 potential opportunities for that to happen, I think it'll be fun to kind of figure out which combination we find the best. So I think from what I've seen with the Saurians, it just seems like it's a base of the 5 power, and then it's that play effect. I think it's fine. It doesn't super excite me. Being able to kill a creature like just on the play is nice. I love Mustic Mermuk in Worlds Collide just because it's, you know, play, deal 4 damage, and that really can, you know, be such a huge swing to kill one of their creatures. You gain 1 on top of another little ability. So I think it's solid. I like it quite a lot, actually.
So since you mentioned it, let's just talk about the other one. There's we'll skip that next card. Well, Sacrosaurus is a 6 power, 2 armor mutant dinosaur. Has a play effect. You may exalt Sacrosaurus. If you do, deal 3 to a creature. So basically, you lose skirmish, but you get an extra power and a couple armor. So,
yep. And this is probably the Sanctum version of the Saurus. Just gains that shield instead of the skirmish effect. So just a little different, but I dig it too. I think it's a fun kind of flavor idea for this set that they were able to pull off.
So. All right, we're on a 15-minute timer here, so we're gonna have to speed up the next ones. But
we got it.
Let's do the last Saurian card, Monument to Primus. Artifact, location, action. Move 1 amber from a friendly creature to another friendly creature. But if Consul Primus is in your discard pile, move 1 from a creature to another creature instead. So basically move it from your guys to the other team.
Whew. The reason I don't play Magic is because those cards can have so many words on some of their cards. And this has a lot of words. Let me read it again. So it says, move 1 amber from a friendly creature to another friendly creature. If that's in your discard pile, move it. Okay, so instead of just moving amber around to maybe beefier creatures, it has the potential to almost do that slow steal mechanic. So yeah, that seems fine.
Yeah. So, and there's 2 in this deck, so that's fine.
Yeah. I'd imagine if you get that artifact, you'll also have at least 1 Consul Primus in there. Similar to like Chain Gang, always having a subtle chain.
Yep. So it is a special card, so makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. I dig it.
Let's do the Untamed.
Let's do the Untamed. All right. We'll start with Floomph. Very funny little beast cat there. He is a 3 power creature that has skirmish, classic Untamed, and it says fight. Give a beast creature 2+1/+1 counters.
Yeah, a little underwhelmed. These power counters that they're pushing with Untamed is all. Like, I loved Coda Untamed, and then they pushed the power counters in AoA, and I just like. I don't know. It's not great. Like, every once in a while, it'll come in handy, but... So, there are some beasts in other houses that could, you know, benefit from the extra power, but not crazy excited about this guy.
Yeah, I think because there's not, like, a regeneration mechanic after a fight, the power counters are a little underwhelming. It makes sense that they're trying to say, like, Untamed maybe starts a little bit lower than Saurian or Sanctum, but they have the potential to get higher. I understand that potential, but the fact that they've still taken that damage and they can't get that damage back makes it not as solid as it is potentially in other games where getting that +1/+1 counter could, you know, you're 6 power, he's 5 power, you kill it, and then you're back to 6 at the start of the turn. If that was the case, I would love that mechanic. The fact that it's not, it just, like, it doesn't do much else for me.
And it is a common, so you're going to see a lot of these in Untamed.
Exactly. So hopefully that's not the theme for the rest of the Untamed package, but let's keep on rolling.
All right, next one is another creature from Untamed, Gloriana's Attendant, 1 power creature mutant that just comes with Enhance with 2 Amber Pips. So 2 other cards in your deck are going to have Amber Pip attached, and it is a common.
Yeah. I like this card. I love cards that just give you amber. The fact that it is a creature that gives you an amber, even though it's one power, it has the potential to reap, so it could potentially give you more. I think it's fine. Think of how much we love Dust Pixie. You can't, you know, do the Nature's Call to play it again or anything like that, but it just, you know, makes it more consistent with amber pips in your deck.
Yeah, I think the sheer amount of, like, amber pips on your deck really helps the, like, efficiency and, like, speed of that deck. So, and this is a common, so you could easily see 2, 3, even 4 of these in a deck, which might get crazy.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. All right, next one. It is one of your favorite cards.
It is my favorite Mass Mutation card so far.
This card is called Key Frog. It is a 2-power beast. It just says destroyed. Forge key at current cost.
Boom. Key cheat on a creature like Chota. But the first card that will allow you to forge on your opponent's turn if they accidentally kill it somehow.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a little awkward just because you play it, your opponent gets a chance to potentially kill it before you can, unless you have a way to kill it with your Untamed package. You know, obviously you don't have to lose a key for it, so it's nice that you can just, you know, have 6 amber and be able to forge. That's always dangerous and spicy, but there will be a lot of weird plays around this card, and it is a common.
I love it. So, I'm going to love that card. I will be very happy to see some key frogs.
You're going to just scour the internet to find the perfect deck.
I want my quadruple key frog deck.
We'll see if that's possible. I hope it is just for you.
All right, next card is an untamed action called Reclaimed by Nature. Comes with an amber pip. It says, play, purge an artifact, resolve its bonus icons as if you had played it. Gets a common.
I think it's okay. I like artifact control quite a lot.
You can eat that part of the forest.
Great. Yeah, I think artifact control is so mandatory in tournament level play. Just because you can't have the Heart of the Forest or Quixelstone or so many of these artifacts that just have this all-time effect that can just, you know, completely change the game. So any sort of artifact control, I love it. Purging artifacts, you'd never have to see that sucker again, is also great. Occasionally, the bonus icon thing will, you know, be even, like, greater for you. Similar to Hawk being able to, you know, gain an additional amber. That card is crazy, killing an artifact and gaining an additional amber. So the fact that it could also do that is pretty sweet. I like this card quite a lot.
All right, we're going to do rapid fire for these last ones. So you get one sentence to respond to these guys. Okay, ready?
Awesome.
Untamed action called Resurgence. It comes with an enhanced draw. So it puts a draw card pip on one of your cards. This is a common. It says, play, return a creature from your discard pile to your hand. If that creature is a mutant, return another creature from your discard pile to your hand.
This card's sweet. Card draw is always great. Potential to bring back 2 creatures could also be super sweet.
That's right. Agreed. It's like a regrowth, but potentially stronger if you have lots of mutants in your untamed house.
Absolutely. Next up is Savage Clash. It is an action, no amber pip. Just play, destroy each creature except the most powerful enemy creature and the least powerful friendly creature.
That art is hilarious, and you gotta love a good board wipe.
Yeah, true. A little bit unfortunate that your worst creature stays out there, but it's fine. Board wipes are always good, so it's okay.
Next card is Mushroom with a View, which is hilarious. It's an untamed artifact. It has an Omni effect. Heal 1 damage from each friendly creature, and it comes with an amber pip.
Yeah, it's fine. A little underwhelming.
I don't really like this card, but I guess you could do it on every house turn for a little bit of something, but not going to be happy to see this that often.
Yeah, it's fine. Next up is Wild Bounty, which has a 2-headed giraffe attacking itself, which is hilarious. It has enhanced 2 amber pips. Always great. And it says, play the next time you play a card this turn, resolve each of its bonus icons an additional time.
Okay, this is obviously highly situational, but the Mushroom with a View card before that has an amber pip, a capture amber, pip and a draw card pip. So when you get those cards with three pips and you see this Wild Bounty card, again, very situational, but you could really like net gain a lot of value out of it. But it could also just be a dead card.
Very true. I think the normal Amber pip counts as a bonus icon, correct? Okay. I think this card's cool. It's a little clunky in your hand, but it's fine.
And then this one has the internet talking. This is a rare. It's called Mercy Malkin Queen. She's a human witch, and she's got some like cats with bat wings flying around her. Three power creature with skirmish. After a friendly cat creature enters play, ward it. And then fight, ready a friendly beast creature. So I guess that's why the cats get a little okay.
Yeah, they're fine. It's kind of weird that they probably almost all of them will have skirmish, so the ward doesn't do a ton right off the bat. I don't know why the internet's going crazy over it. I think it's okay. What are your thoughts on it?
Well, I think it's more like for the memes. Like there's like
a
crazy cat lady with bat cats, you know?
Gotcha. I was over here strictly like thinking about gameplay, and it's like just appreciate how hilarious this card is. Yeah. So, all right, I'm in. It's awesome.
Yeah.
Ugh, goodness. And last but not least, Word of Returning's in this deck. It's awesome for Saurian hate. Sanctum hate too now, which is pretty sweet. So this is going to be a really sought after card for mass mutations, especially against those two houses.
Well, we might be seeing a lot more capture in general because of the extra Amber pips coming. So this card could be even stronger than it was before.
Yep, I love some Word of Returning. I will definitely be looking for a good deck with that in there. So sweet, that was our mass mutations quick hot take for you guys. Hopefully, we'll be able to go through some of the other decks. Or if we have anything else revealed, we'll try to go through them, try to use the knowledge that we already have about the set to kind of evaluate these decks. But we hope that at least gave you a quick idea. Again, as you're watching this podcast, feel free to look up that deck list so you can kind of see the cards as we go through them too.
Yeah, and if you've played with the decks and you have an interesting take on something or found some kind of weird connection, we'd love to hear about it in the comments or hit us up on social media, YouTube, whatever. Love to hear about it.
Absolutely.
All right, since we're strapped for time, real quick, we did introduce a new segment last time called the Wild Reversal Challenge, where each podcast we're going to bring an idea for a reversal game, basically put stipulations on what that reversal game will look like. So last episode, I came and I said we're each going to choose a deck for each other that has to include NARP, and it has to be at least 62 SAS. And we played that game, and it's on YouTube, and it was a great game, wasn't it, Jim?
It was delightful. I think you only said great game because you pulled out the victory, but
and you ultimately got punked by your own NARP.
Yep. NARP is not great for trying to gain ambers. What I learned from that deck,
because I think so, you were trying
who
to
knew?
Neutron Shark. You were trying to reap and kill some stuff, and you couldn't because of NARP.
Exactly. Yep, that was it. Oh goodness, that darn Neutron Shark. So
check it out on YouTube, and because it's a fun little format. But Jim, you get to decide this next week's Wild Reversal Challenge. So what stipulations are you putting on our decks?
Sure. So I'm actually going to go with kind of a running theme for this week. So kind of a running joke that we've always had with Wild Wormhole is if you play Wild Wormhole, you win the game. So it even got to the point where players are joking. If you play the Wild Wormhole, it's the kind of the house rules, you win. So to honor that for this past week, the stipulations for this week's Wild Reversal is that you have to pick a reversal deck with three Wild Wormholes.
Okay.
My thoughts behind it is because you can find some jank with Wild Wormholes. You can find Key Hammers. You can find Axiom of Gris, Volcanoes, Gateway to Dis. So many of these crazy cards that you just like cringe thinking about ever drawing this. You now get to give to your opponent. So we're going to say it has to have three Wild Wormholes, at least a 62 SAS. I think that's probably a pretty good benchmark for kind of at least a somewhat competitive deck. And of course, we have to completely buy into the just you find a Wild Wormhole, you just have to rip it and just hope for the best. So I think think there's a high potential for some hilarity to ensue on that deck.
Yeah, I love that. And we played with the NARP challenge. We did the rule that if you drew a NARP and you called Brodnar, you had to play him. You couldn't discard him. And I think we should probably keep that same love for this one. If we pull the wormhole and call Logos, we have to play the wormhole.
Absolutely. Yeah, we're definitely not going to play around that potential. You just got to grin and bear it and hope for the best.
Okay, Jim, we have 3 minutes, so this is going to be rapid fire King Potato. You ready?
Easiest three call of my entire life. I'm so excited to win this one.
This week's King Potato deck, where you have to successfully guess the three houses based on its name, comes from Jay Philippeg. I filmed one of his games from the True Survival, and he reminded me about this deck, and I'm very excited for you to guess. This deck is the Terror That Glares at a Pair. The Terror That amazing. Glares at a Pair. That's like a lot of rhyming, too.
Yeah. What sets it from?
It is from Worlds Collide.
Amazing. Can you use it in a sentence?
Yes. The Terror That Glares at a Pair destroyed that pair with its glare.
Wow. You are quite the poet. All right. The Terror That Glares at a Pair. Interesting. So we're going to start with the Terror. We'll just stick with this. I think that would be a pretty easy translation for a literal there's a terror. Glaring. I'm going to go Saurian. They're pretty smug, so I feel like they'd get annoyed and just stare at you. So that'd be the glare part of that. And then at a pair, we're going to go Logos, because they need to eat. There's a lot of humans in Logos. So,
well, congratulations, Jamie. You've continued your streak of losing, because the houses are Saurian, Star Alliance, and Untamed. No diss.
Hate to see it. I thought I had it this week.
I know. It's like, it's such a troll. It like says the Terror doesn't have diss, but
yeah. I was really doomed to fail there.
All right, guys. Thanks for checking out this episode. Be sure to follow us on YouTube, on Twitter and Facebook, the Wormhole. You can join our Discord as well. Appreciate you guys tuning in. Sorry we have to get out of here quick, but we gotta eat. Gotta get home, gotta take care of the baby, so
understood.
Jim?
David?
We'll see you on the next wormhole.
Sounds great. Happy forging, friends.